This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Joining me now at the Wells Fargo Center on day two of the Democratic National Convention is a regular on our program, Arun Gupta. He's an independent journalist reporting for a number of outlets. And I think you're writing here for Telesur, right?
Yeah, I'm writing for Telesur. I've also done pieces for Yes Magazine and The Raw Story.
Well, welcome to the program, first of all. This has been a very exciting election. I know you've been covering everything that's been going on both outside and inside. Is there a disconnect that's really palpable to you between how people are acting and feeling on the streets versus in here? Or is it actually closer than it's been in previous conventions?
That's a really good question. I think... People on the inside do tend to be more polished. You hear more kind of wider range, or what one might say, more extreme opinions on the street, whether it's from the right-wing supporters or the Bernie supporters out here. Some guy today who told me he was a commie said that he was here to stop Hillary Clinton, that she's more dangerous than Donald Trump in Cleveland, and actually also yesterday in Philadelphia. I've talked to plenty of white nationalists who support Donald Trump. Here there's definitely a lot of anger because of what happened with Bernie Sanders and the email leak that came out showing that the process was rigged against him, which some of us have been saying for 15 months that, of course, this is rigged. This is a party of the 1%. In Cleveland, you know, there were a lot of people who were not particularly happy that Trump was a nominee, but were falling in line. Then there are a lot of people who were upset that Cruz did not endorse Trump. So there was also definitely divisions here. But these are also two very different conventions.
In fact, I'm so glad you're bringing up Cleveland. I didn't really feel like I could make my way to Cleveland simply because this year feels even more dangerous. And so I sort of took, I went on vacation instead of being in Cleveland. But I was watching your Facebook Live feeds, Arun, and you were brave. You were out there talking to protesters. You were even talking to some Hillary fans that I thought was really interesting and challenging them. They weren't quite used to being challenged. Did you at any point feel that Cleveland was going to be a sort of unsafe space, though? Ohio's an open carry state.
I think that was mainly a lot of hype. As some of your listeners may know, I covered the Bundy militia occupation out in eastern Oregon, and I was with these gun-toting right-wing militia types. I never felt unsafe around them. The only time I ever felt unsafe was when the cops pulled me over. I'm really not that afraid of the protesters. The cops, though, tend to scare me.
And if your name is an indication enough, at least for our radio audience, Arun Gupta is a brown man. Arun, so...
But I think that's a really important point. You know, this kind of, like, imminent threat of violence. And, of course, some of it is real, but it's, you know, the Orlando shooting, even though there's zero connection, I think, really, to ISIS with that. The Nice attacks again, you know. But these were just horrific massacres. And so it creates this atmosphere of fear that the convention's played into. But the FBI and Cleveland police stoked an atmosphere of fear. They targeted activists with these door knocks, scaring away a lot of people. And then you also had white nationalists say they were going to open carry. And so protesters were, leftists were freaking out about that. And then, like, right-wingers were freaking out about, you know, black nationalists say they're going to open carry. So there was an atmosphere, even though I discount it. I think it's all overblown.
Now, this convention is... the Democratic Convention is a really interesting place. You've covered Democratic conventions before, right? I mean, I don't think I've seen this many party outsiders as before, as you know, as we're seeing today. And what's really interesting is I'm seeing signs, for example, Palestinian human rights, which I've never seen before. Just a couple of days ago, a U.S. airstrike killed 70 Syrian civilians. This is something that should have, of course, been front and center. It's not being discussed very much. Now, I'm wondering how whether we have actually raised the level of political discourse because of the Bernie Sanders campaign, or is it still fairly limited?
Well, I think we have. The issue that I bring up is let's be good leftists. This is non-dialectical. The left has become very ideaistic because it has no organizational capacity. It has no real base anymore. You know, there's a base in labor. There's like a base in the African American community, a base in disgruntled, overeducated white college kids. But there is no real there's no popular mass movements out there, right? The left is not putting millions of people in the street. So when the ideas get out there, people on the left think that that's enough. And it's like, okay, that's good, but more needs to happen. You know, after 2008, so many people were saying, neoliberalism is discredited. Well, it's just like, well, that's not enough. One, you need a better idea, but you also need the material force to put that idea into action. So yes, I do applaud that there has been an opening, but we need to now put these ideas into action, and that's where the left and progressives are failing.
Do you think that a lot of the energy that the Sanders supporters have poured into, for example, forcing a roll call vote, maybe possibly overturning Tim Kaine as VP pick, has been a bit of a waste of energy?
Well, I think, I just wrote a piece that people can see that'll be up on Telesora English about how the reason people are so upset is because they've reached the limits of a deeply flawed strategy, which is that you can affect radical political change from inside the Democratic Party. That is simply not going to happen. What we see time and again, now, of course, you do need allies on the inside, and this is not an argument against, I think folks should be engaging in electoral politics at the local level, at the most, grassroots basic elections. But to, go for presidential elections when you're going up against the power of the state and capital is just, you're going to lose. There's no way you are going to win.
But, of course, a lot of Sanders supporters, who are those people who are newly engaged in the process, who might never have gotten involved if it weren't for being inspired by him, they didn't know that.
Right, but I think, what I tend to do is speak more directly to the left, and by that I mean the anti-capitalist left. We know what labor is going to do. We know what organized labor will do, what civil rights group, what feminist groups, LGBTQ groups. We know what they're all going to do. But in terms of the radical left, right, the ones who are behind the anti-war movements, the ones who were really the prime movers behind the global justice movement, behind Occupy Wall Street, it's small in numbers, but it can really punch above its weight. I think this was a mistake for the radical left to get involved in the Sanders campaign, that it needs to keep its focus on building these kind of really deeply political organizations with a very highly politically educated, and by that I mean in the tactics and strategies, not book learning, and very organized and disciplined formations that can actually achieve real meaningful radical change. Show me 1,000 good organizers and you can do something at a national level. And that's what the lack left is these disciplined organized cadre formations.
Chris Hedges and Cornel West have said vote green.
Again, I think that's, you're still playing the electoralism game. This is all a distraction. The left simply does not, I'm going to look directly into the camera. The left simply does not have the capacity to affect this election. If you want to vote, go vote. I don't care who you vote for. I would say, it probably does make sense to vote for Hillary Clinton in a swing state. I'm not going to tell you to do it, but Trump is a unique threat. He is consolidating these white nationalists. We are going to see just a brutal counterattack on Black Lives Matter. matter on Mexicans, immigrants, Muslims if he is elected, unlike anything we've ever seen before. But you need to keep your eyes on the prize and focus on independent movement building.
So, basically voting is the least anybody could or should do.
Exactly. And so these huge discussions are just nothing but a distraction.
You cast your ballot on one day every 4 years.
It takes 1 second.
And so, of course, this idea that Bernie Sanders is putting out that just because he is not the nominee, his political revolution will continue. The language on the surface of it sounds like what you're saying, but do you actually believe that somebody like a Bernie Sanders can foment a political revolution and that it'll simply sort of go on without him?
No, I mean, you know, folks can look up my writings on both Telesaur and Counterpunch, where there was, the left is immersed in all this kind of cultural media theory, and yet there was very little attention paid to that so many people were supporting him because he was essentially a celebrity, right? You know, there's this assumption that people are purely supporting him out of politics, and I'm not saying this is a good thing or a bad thing, but you have to analyze what exists and really probe deeply why are people supporting him. This is not a monolithic force, you know? He's cool. He's this wacky, you know, Jewish granddad that you never had from Brooklyn. He talks funny. You know, he's also sincere. He is like one of the few trustworthy.
He's consistent.
Figures. He's consistent, you know, but he had real celebrity power. It's clear.
But to be fair, a lot of people had never heard of him throughout his 40-year career until 15 months.
Right. Yes, and that is true. I'm just saying he used that celebrity power, and now he's going to use it again. It's not a movement. A movement, it's going to be him and his inner circle advisors deciding who to support, who to throw money and resources behind. A movement, by definition, has to be self-organized, self-directed, self-determined. None of that exists with the Sanders campaign.
Arun, I'm wondering if you think that the real, then, sort of politics that takes place in these conventions are really among the insiders. A lot of elbow rubbing, a lot of trading favors, a lot of people trying to figure out if they're going to be able to get a job in the next Clinton administration.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of glad handling and, backslapping going on. That's what these are really about. I mean, God, I saw Gray Davis out there. I'm like, Jesus, I thought they were keeping him in a bunker 100 meters underground after, you know, Schwarzenegger was able to oust him. I mean, you
former governor of California.
Yeah, you just see every hanger on every cynical operator coming out of the woodwork. And the RNC was different, because people really stayed away for that. And, you know, one of the differences here, this feels more like a corporate love-in. I saw very few lobbyists at the RNC.
So there were no, basically the message was that people didn't want to be part of a Trump administration for the most part?
Yeah, that was a lot of it. You know, I mean, ironically, that felt kind of more middle class. Signifiers of wealth in this country are on display here. A lot of very expensive clothing and a lot of very conventionally good-looking people.
Yeah, whereas the Sanders candidates are the dressed-down people. Arun, thank you.
Same with a lot of the RNC. You know, it looked like a giant cruise ship basically ran into Cleveland, tipped over and spilled out 20,000 red splotch, pasty white people with thick calves holding up thicker bellies.
Oh, my goodness. Arun, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Arun Gupta is a correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.